This Mass is being offered for the conversion of lost souls. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Today we have the grace of celebrating a pope, one of the great popes of the Church. You probably don't know anything about him unless you just happen to really just dive into the saints, but St. Telesphorus was one of the great popes. Also today, St. John Henry Newman, the first and only male canonized saint who was of the United States himself, in that way, first bishop anyway. St. Telesphorus, he was the eighth pope after St. Peter. And so going that early on, we find something about St. Telesphorus is that he was a man who was a hermit, and he lived on Mount Carmel. And so because of that, the Carmelites, who came much later, claim him as one of their own because he was a hermit who lived there. But called out of that hermitage, he eventually was the one who was elected to be the Pope of Rome. And much of what we do today as Catholics actually is traced back to St. Telesphorus. If I can remember all the things that were there that I looked at, first off, it was his life as a hermit, so devout as he was, that actually changed the shape of how you and I celebrate the great feasts of the Church. It was St. Telesphorus who... He was the first person to, the first one to institute the midnight mass, because that's what he would do as a hermit. He knew it was at midnight that Christ was born, and so it was at midnight that he began the first mass for Christmas every year. And so he carried that as a tradition to Rome, and obviously it took off. We even had a beautiful midnight mass here as well, offered in the traditional form. Beyond that, he was so enamored with this hymn that was already circulating from the ancient times within the Church, but it was he who first put it as part of the Mass. So back in the day, there was an ability to be able to have these things piously added to the Mass, and because he did it as a hermit, inserting it into his Christmas Mass in specific, because that's what the Gloria is, which we just did there, a really beautiful beginning of meditation on Christmas, so it remained, and so is used for every feast day, of third class or higher. In addition, there's something else with the Christmas feast that he did, if I can recall it. I can't recall it right now, but it may come to me a little bit later. He also changed something else about Christmas, but the season of Lent. Every year, he would, instead of keeping Lent for a short period of time, he would make a Lent of 7 weeks. So he would pray and fast for 7 weeks, and then that would culminate on Easter Day every year. So seeing that the Pope did this, the rest of the Church saw that this was fitting of a preparation for the season of Easter through these 7 weeks of fasting, so it spread all throughout the Church, and as well, he's credited as well with keeping Easter always on a Sunday. Prior to St. Telesphorus, Easter was a variable feast just like Christmas, always fixed to December 25th. So too was the feast of Easter, always fixed to a particular calendar day. But seeing the advantage of having Easter celebrated on the day on which the day of the week, when it would always have been the first time on a Sunday, the Church saw advantage in that and fixing it to that day. So Easter was no longer fixed to a day on the calendar, but it was fixed to a season that was judged by the movement of the moon, but fixed upon a particular date, which would be a Sunday always. And so St. Telesphorus did a great deal for us within the Church. And so we can see that so much of who it is that we understand ourselves to be as Catholics, even in the simple thing of praying the Gloria as often, or even in having Mass at midnight, or making sure that we do a good and long preparation for the season of Easter, it all is traced back to him. Now, spend a greater portion on this day on St. John Neumann. He's an incredible man. He has an incredible life story in that he is a young man who, being a seminarian in Bohemia, really, really far away in the Czech Republic, his great desire was to come to America, not for the reasons where anyone else you might imagine might want to come to America, the land of the free, the home of the brave, as some sort of economic opportunity. He knew that there were souls there that needed to be saved, and they had no priests. So even as a young seminarian, he spoke with his bishop, who gave him permission and to seek to be studying here, and then later on to be ordained. So he had this great heart of the missions. That you may not know this, but until the year 1907, the year of the building of this church, in which we're celebrating right now, until that year, the entirety of the United States was considered mission territory. That's not long ago. In fact, I believe there were only, later on, there were only 36 priests in all of New York, which was a diocese, only 36 priests to serve 200,000 Catholics. We think we have it bad now. So he went and he struggled, and he knew that he had to understand English in some sort of way, and so no, there was nobody to teach him English, so he would go out and go to some French dock workers, and he learned French to be able to communicate them, with them as well, and then they taught him best they could some sort of English that he would be able to do. And going back and forth, eventually, it came time for his ordination. Well, his bishop, I believe it was, that he retired or had some sort of difficulty there, and so his ordination was put off, and then the next one who came to replace him said, oh no, we have enough priests. We don't need any more priests. So we won't ordain you. Can you imagine that? Spending all this time in seminary for the single goal, and now the bishop won't ordain him because he says, we got too many priests already. We're good. And so seeing that, he would not be put down. He knew that this was his vocation. So he went all the way from there seeking to go to the United States because he knew they needed priests. So he went all the way from there on foot, the only way that he could, traveling as far as he could till he could finally make it to the United States. He was barely able to secure any form of passage over to there through what little money that he had. He was very poor. And finally arriving in New York, he went as soon as he could to meet with the bishop who was there, to be able to be there, and began learning all the languages that were spoken in New York. Not just English, but he began learning Dutch and Irish, Gaelic, becoming really good at all these languages because he knew he would have to be with these. And as soon as he spoke to the bishop who was there, the bishop said, wow, a seminarian wants to come? He did a quick test of him to make sure that everything was legitimate. He had his papers and everything, that he completed his studies, and he said, I'll ordain you right away. And so it was within a couple of days or after his arrival with the bishop that he was ordained a priest. And he sent him to be one of those 36 or 38 priests who were ministering to all the people of the territory of New York, sent him immediately to a place called Buffalo, New York. And in that parish, I've celebrated his parish there, St. John Neumann. That parish there is, I've celebrated Mass there twice with my spiritual director at the time. You know, St. John Neumann gave himself to tireless work among the apostles there, would trudge each and every day to be able to go out and visit the Catholics who were in the surrounding area, going on foot from place to place, visiting them and spending time with them. He would learn their languages so that he would be able to speak and to minister to them, knowing all these languages. In fact, we'll get to that a little bit later on, but he had so much work to do that his people were so gracious that they gave him a horse to be able to travel from place to place. Well, he was not a very tall man, not a very big man, and his feet didn't fit in the stirrups. And so because of that, he really couldn't figure out how to ride the horse very well. And so even though they gave him a horse to be able to help him along his way, he ended up walking everywhere while dragging the horse behind him to be able to make it from place to place in this vast territory in which he was ministering to the Catholics. Well, going about, he eventually did learn how to ride a horse and got stirrups that actually fit his feet so that it would make it all the easier for him to do so. But despite his tireless work, he thought that he was not amounting to anything. He thought he was too weak to be able to do the task that he was. He said, I was too prideful. I was too this. I was too that, and accusing him of all these things. He thought he was too lazy in his work. And everyone who would have met him would have said, no, I mean, you're the most humble of all people. You're so self-effacing in every way. And the fact that you work so hard, you work harder than any field worker does or factory worker. You give yourself totally to the task. But he rebuked himself in these many ways. Eventually, seeing the state of his soul, he realized that he wasn't able to live out the life the way he was. There was a melancholy, a spiritual aridity, a dryness that had sent into his soul, and he realized that he couldn't make it on his own anymore. And so St. John Neumann, the young man, going to his spiritual director who saw the same thing, invited him to pursue a vocation with the Redemptorists, who were in Baltimore. And the bishop was sad to lose his priest, but he knew that he had got so much work out of him already and that he wanted what was best for this priest, freely allowed him to go and to discern. And he did become a Redemptorist working there in Baltimore, in Maryland. I should have said this earlier, but the first words that he said when he took his parish and did his first baptism is he's quoted as saying, if all I ever amount to in this life was doing this one baptism, saving this one soul, then all the trials and difficulties that I've gone through to come here to America have been worth it. Have been worth it. Just to save a single soul. That's because this is the kind of priest who actually gets it, who actually understands what is going on. Throughout his ministry there with the Redemptorists, being a priest there, he did great work. He expanded many ministries that were going on there, and finally was able to be lifted out of that aridity of soul, that dryness of soul that he was experiencing because he was so surrounded by these other good, zealous priests working in the field of God. Later on, he was called to be a bishop, and they sent him back to be the bishop. But seeing all the great things that were laid before him there in New York, he tirelessly began his task of seeking out everybody within the whole area to be able to help them to encounter Christ. He looked around and he saw that there was only one school in the entirety of the place. There was this Know-Nothing Party, which, if you know your history, was basically founded as a place to destroy Catholics, to keep them away. The Know-Nothing Party, you can look up and see many pamphlets that were distributed by them that would describe the Irish and other Catholics who had come over from the Old World to the New World, as depicting them as crocodiles swimming across the Atlantic Ocean, crawling onto the New York land with papal tiaras or bishop hats over them, saying that this is the papist scourge that's coming into our land. Such was the grave anti-Catholicism of that time. I wish that was the kind of anti-Catholicism we had today, where it was out in the open and it was so clear and so heinous. Now it is very much disguised and has become the national pastime. So remaining Catholic during these days is something that must be done with great effort, given all the difficulties that are put on by the world. Now, St. John Neumann didn't get discouraged at the fact that he didn't have schools or he didn't have diocesan funds in any way. He began working hard, and within a number of years he was able to open up all kinds of parishes. In fact, I believe it was every month of his entire life as a bishop he was opening up a new parish. Every single month, opening up a new parish, building a new parish in there. The schools went from 1 to 200 in his lifetime. As he spread them around and was able to get lots of good sisters from the Old World to come and help staff these schools and to begin orders which would begin bringing about local vocations as well for the same purpose. Amidst all these things, that same heart of St. John Neumann remained, that he always thought that he was too lazy. He always thought that he was too prideful. He always thought that he was not able to give himself fully to the work that was there. And so we have recorded a famous letter, which I won't read for you, but it basically just says that he's writing to Rome saying, I don't know that I'm cut out for this kind of work. I see that there's so many tasks ahead of me, and I'm bumbling. I don't speak with a very good accent all the time, the English that is here. I see that I have so many difficulties that are before me. And in fact, I know that you've sent me an auxiliary bishop. And I see that maybe it pleases the Holy Father that I would no longer be the bishop anymore. In fact, what I think that you should do instead is make this young man to be the bishop, and maybe send me out to a small little place that I can more easily take care of, that you carve out of this vast territory. Let him have the prominent thing. I see that he has great skill within himself, that he can do quite a bit more than I can. Or maybe if you see it fit to accept my retirement at this age. By the way, he was only in his 40s. He was only in his 40s when he wrote this. If you could set my retirement in this way, I'd gladly recognize whatever it is that the Holy Father wants. That's what I want for myself as well. Obviously, the Holy Father didn't want him to retire, but he, in his own difficulties, saw that his work never amounted up to what he believed that God would call him to. He eventually died at the age, I believe it was of 43 or somewhere along there, doing all these things within such a short life. That's our saint. That's our saint today. St. John Neumann is a man who tirelessly worked for souls, and even seeing his own weakness, realized that he couldn't live out his priestly life all by himself, but that he had to take refuge in so many ways with others, with good priests. And so in doing that, was able to be pulled out of that spiritual aridity and then to go forward and do the good work which God had called him to something greater, where he would be strengthened by that religious life and by the work with priests, which were able to encourage him along the way to give his life totally to Christ. Something that is inspiring for you and I, that sometimes we can't do it all on our own, that we have to pull together. And I'm glad that so many of you have formed a group to study the scriptures and to be able to accomplish that very same task. It's important to come together as Catholics and not to seek to merely do it on our own, but also to recognize that, as John Neumann did in his very first baptism, that all the trials and difficulties, the hardships that he went through, the disappointments that he passed on through his life, they were all worth it if he could just save a single soul, if he could just bring one soul to holy baptism. And it should be the same thing for you and I. The same thing. If you and I were to spend our entire lives and just bring one person who is away from the Lord back to him, one person back to Mass, and that's all we ever did in the whole of our lives, well, then what have we done? We've doubled the occupants in that. We've doubled the occupants who would exist forever in heaven. And that is a very big thing. Very big thing. Just to add one more soul that otherwise would not be there in heaven because of the efforts that we make, everything within our lives is worth it. God willing, maybe you'll be able to bring more than one. Maybe all your children, all your family members. That would be a great task in of itself to be able to do so. But just to bring one soul back to God, That's what it's worth. That's what makes all the sufferings that you and I could ever go with in our lives all the more worth it, just for that single soul. St. John Neumann inspires us in the way St. Talos for us, and reminding us of all the great things of the Mass that we have because of him. That's what should buoy you and I as we go through this day leading up to Epiphany, where even greater mysteries will be foretold tomorrow and on Sunday. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.